If you want a little show and you don't know where to go, put on your headphones and hit the mark.
Hey guys, thanks for tuning in to Hit the Mark with Mark Levy. This is your host, Mark Levy, and of course, giant, amazing thank you to Jesse Neal and Ryan Carls. Both of those are great episodes, and you guys seem to really enjoy them, and I really enjoyed recording them. My voice just cracked there. It happens sometimes, guys. We're all going through puberty in weird ways. I feel like I am literally inside a Manhattan studio apartment right now. I'm sure we'll be addressing that very shortly. I am not in the Manhattan studio apartment. I am in the studio in Manhattan that I paid money to rent, which is totally fine. It's one of those days. It's going to be a fun episode. There's been some fun given circumstances that we've been dealing with. But you know what, guys? Given circumstances is what makes this podcast what it is. As I mentioned in the Ryan Carls episode, yeah, have your animal there. Let's interact with the society that we are in this hour as we all learn about each other. As you know, there's many ways to support the show. Go to iTunes, rate us, review us. It helps the show. If you give us a 5-star review, today's quote is going to be a very fun one. So if you give us a 5-star review and take a photo of you writing, like, with you and this exact phrase. The phrase will be, don't book a room in an improv studio on a Wednesday night. If you give me that exact phrase in your 5-star iTunes review, take a photo of it, email it to hchampod@gmail.com. You will find yourself a free Hit the Mark t-shirt eventually. By eventually, I mean kind of soon. Just, of course, got to figure all that stuff out. It's not going to happen overnight. Of course, you know, you can buy shirts. Go to Zazzle.com. We have a store. You know the spiel for that. And, of course, PayPal. If you want to support the show, go to hitthemark.podomatic.com. You'll see all 176 numbered episodes and the 13 or so unnumbered episodes, all of them for free. And on the side, you'll see a PayPal button there. You can donate as much or as little money as you want. It all supports the show. Today's guest is Sean O'Reilly. We'll be talking to him very shortly. I am very excited to talk to him. But first, I got to do a quick film review. I saw Foxcatcher, and my guest just lit up by a light bulb. It is, for those that don't know, it's about John DuPont, the mysterious billionaire played by Steve Carell in the film, who is obsessed with Olympic wrestling. And it deals with him and the Schwartz brothers, played by Channing Tatum and Mark Ruffalo. The movie is directed by the guy that did Moneyball. It is very similar in pace to Moneyball, a little bit more mellow because there's no like intense phone calls. Even the climax of the movie is kind of slightly anticlimactic, but that's not any reason to hate on this movie, because this movie is expertly well acted. Steve Carell is so fucking good in this movie. Like, right now in my mind, best actor is between him and Michael Keaton for Birdman, because both of those were such dynamite performances. And it's really interesting because, like, I really get obsessed with watching a lived-in performance, and Steve Carell leaves Steve Carell at the door. He is not Steve Carell in this movie. He is John DuPont. And Channing Tatum, who is an actor who I've been learning to respect a lot more, has fully earned my respect after this performance. It's dynamite. By the time this episode airs on Monday, it will not be a limited release, from what I understand. It'll be playing all over the country, so anyone can see it anywhere. It fully hits the mark. I'm purposely not telling you much more about the plot, just because it's based on a true story, and, you know, if you do any research, you're going to find out, like, literally any research, you're going to find out what happens at the end, and I'm not going to do that to you. So, because, you know what, if you don't know what happened, then it's a good shock. That's all I'll say about that. So hit the mark. Okay, so today's guest, I am so beyond thrilled to have. You know him because he's on everyone's favorite game show, which is a show at UCB. I should let that be known. He is on The Serling, the really cool Twilight Zone improv team. He is on Johnny Velvet, which is a team that is also fucking fantastic. He's on The Farm, which is a team that I've heard of, don't know much about, but I'm sure they're great. He is also a great stand-up comedian. I've laughed harder from the one stand-up set that I saw him do than I have from a lot of other stand-up comedians. He's a great guy and a person I've wanted on the show for a long time, Sean O'Reilly.
Hi, Mark.
How you doing, man?
Good. I was very excited that I got to be here for you to say it really hits the mark. I was I was really waiting for that one. Yeah. I haven't seen Foxcatcher yet, but I want to.
Yeah, I know you're a big movie nerd too, like me. So.
Yeah, yeah. The last thing I saw in the theater was Birdman, actually.
Yeah, Birdman was
I really like it.
I need to see it. I mean, like, as a diehard theater nerd, and as I was telling you while we're walking through Times Square,
yeah.
I don't hate Times Square as an actor.
Yeah.
So like Birdman was just like me, like, for lack of a better word, nerd chasing all over the place.
Yeah.
In many different ways.
Now, have you ever been in a production that had, like, crazy behind-the-scenes, like, zaniness like that?
Just, like, normal small drama.
Okay.
I mean, the regional play that I did, things got tense a little bit. That's about it.
Ah.
Yeah, I mean, like in college, there's, like, some, like, really elaborate productions and stuff like that. Like, when I say elaborate, I mean, like, elaborate for college, like 50 people and like huge sets that, and a lot of weird things happening, but nothing like too crazy.
Yeah.
I
was never, you know, I never was a theater guy myself.
Which is interesting because you were like a really good actor. Like,
oh, thank you.
I mean, like, you're one of the few people that I know that, like, I feel that does a lot of improv that I know more for them doing characters and stuff than like doing improv.
Well, I'm just a big dumb goofball, which is
okay.
Think about that.
Not bad.
But no, I'm not saying it's bad. You know, that's a thing a lot of people assume about me is that I was like a theater guy.
And you have the voice too for it too.
Yeah. I like characters that pontificate.
Yeah.
I like that, like, pomposity and a bit of arrogance.
Oh, they're so much fun.
Yeah, and I also love, which helps me in the Serling, I love that style of acting that's just, like, you know, the main character in a sci-fi film is like, we've got to go over here. My God, what are we doing? Like, that sort of thing
is,
like,
yeah.
The most fun in the world to me.
This room is ridiculous to me.
Yeah.
Okay, we not talked about it in the first 7 minutes of the episode. We are in literally what looks like a bedroom inside 150 Studios, which is the only place I could find that bad room, which I'm very thankful for.
Yeah. I lived in a studio apartment in Manhattan for a couple of years.
Was it this big?
It was slightly larger than this, including the bathroom.
I believe that.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with this.
I mean, the rug leads me to believe that a murder took place here.
Yeah, this room,
like,
there's a rug, and there's also two tones of paint on the wall, which is always a fun feeling.
I always like that. A lot of rehearsal studios have that sort of, it's like two tones of paint or just enough scuff marks in the wall to just go like, well, nobody's taking care of it in a while.
Like, my favorite is in Champion Studios, the room that is, if not mistaken, closest to the check-in but by the elevators.
Yeah.
It has, like, that weird, like, orange, like, scratch mark on the wall.
Yeah, that's weird.
Like, I'm like, did someone get murdered while they were painting with their hand?
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
Like, it's like, it looks like a figure eight,
yeah.
But, like, it, like, if the figure eight got moved off the wall while it was, like, going up.
Yeah, I like to think it's, like, a weird, like, ritualistic symbol. Like, somebody sacrificed someone
which,
there.
Which, I mean, it's totally
and that's, yeah, that's the symbol of their neo-pagan god.
Of course. Yeah. But, I mean, it's just really funny.
Yeah, you're right, Mark. Nothing wrong with that.
Nothing wrong with that.
No, you just
and if not mistaken, there's a hole in that wall too.
Yeah, the monster burst out of there.
Was
summoned.
But I mean, Champion Studios is a place where I like to do improv because I feel like whenever I do an improv like set like at like a rehearsal studio that's like shady as shit.
Yeah,
it's always better than like a place like Simple Studios where it's beautiful.
Yeah. Do you have that feeling then where you're like, you're really fucking doing it? Or I can curse.
Oh, curse as much as you want.
Cool.
We have an explicit sticker. We've had an explicit sticker required since February. So.
Cool. All right.
Yeah.
So do you feel like you're like you're really doing it? Like it's grimy and you're like that suffering artist kind of thing?
Oh, yeah, dude. Like, I mean,
that's
like,
what you got to get. You got to get down in the muck and you got to
get
70s New York.
I played a fucking heroin addict at the improvised play in the third play.
Great.
And the play was not a comedy, but it did have laughs. Let's put it that way. And those laughs, like, fucking destroyed you because the play was that depressing.
I like that. I like when you have a piece of art that just beats you down so hard that the laughs are so much. Like, they're just these dark existential laughs.
Yeah. And like the like there was like a line where like you know my second scene like when my character like bought heroin mm-hmm. before the scene started. Sarah Hepburn Smith, who was playing my wife, and it's at. I was like, where'd you buy it? And like, I drove to Dover. Because, like, we were, like, the play was set in Delaware.
Okay.
For some reason, like, it just happened.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, I'm like, I drove to Dover. And I get the biggest laugh ever. Like, just me just responding, I drove to Dover.
Yeah, I went to Dover.
Like, that's it. Like,
I feel like it's the banality of that.
Right? I guess. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, whatever, man. I mean.
Traffic on the 85.
Is that what it is?
No. Oh. I just put the idea of, like, oh, yeah, where'd you get the heroin? Oh, I had to go out to Huntsville. So, like, I-95 was a mess. So anyway, I'm throwing up on the car steering wheel because I'm so sick because I need heroin.
Yeah.
And wouldn't you know it, road construction. Like, come on.
Yeah. But you know what? I got the heroin.
I got the heroin. At the end of the day, I got the heroin.
To what, like, would make
me so happy?
So
anyway, give me your wallet.
Can I just tell you something that would make me so happy, even though this would never happen?
Yeah.
If, like, someone was listening to this episode on, like, just randomly, like, on like, a boombox mm-hmm. somewhere, and, like, someone walks by and just hears the heroin talk.
Yeah.
That would make me the happiest person in the world. It's not going to happen. I mean, like...
You never know.
You know what?
It's like somebody's like...
This is a challenge for my fans in London.
Uh-huh.
Please do that. Because as people might know, I had a lot of downloads in London recently. That was blowing my mind.
That's good.
So, please do that.
I wonder if London ever had, like, that sort of... Was there ever, like, a B-boy movement... There had to have been. In London, right? There's got to be.
I imagine so.
They have rap there, you know? Like, I don't know. But I like the idea of that, sort of, like, do the right thing.
Yeah.
What was the guy? What's the character's name who had the boombox?
Oh my God. I'm forgetting his name all of a sudden.
Yeah.
Radio Raheem.
Yeah, Radio Raheem.
Yeah.
Like a Radio Raheem, but he's a British guy.
Yeah.
I wonder. I just wonder.
Giancarlo Esposito was in Do the Right Thing, and he is British.
Oh, yeah?
Isn't he?
Is he?
No, I don't think so. I'm making that up,
I don't think so.
I'm going crazy. I'm going crazy. I'm in a room talking to myself. Sean's not here.
Yeah. I would love that. Is if you go back to... I'm going to, like, to put the intros and outros in. You're like, there's no other side of this conversation.
That'd be so fucking
It's
weird.
Just me talking for an hour.
And then the guy that paid money is like, hey, are you okay? Like, the end of the episode is like, can be like, ambulance! This episode's so dark, and we're not even 13 minutes into it, and I love it.
It's Times Square, man. You know, it's just got that energy.
Hey, for those that don't know, on 46th Street, there's now a giant Jesus LED sign.
Yeah, that thing is huge.
That I literally could not take my eyes off, nor could I stop talking about.
Yeah, it was like I was saying in the street, it's like it reminded me of like Blade Runner Los Angeles, but without the whimsy.
It had a lot of colors in it.
Yeah, it was a nightmare. I don't know. I'm not a fan of Times Square. It's just this really like ugly fever dream to me.
Okay.
Like it's just like, yeah, that's how I feel.
All right.
It's just like this big fever dream. And like I've worked in the vicinity of Times Square for like almost 10 years at this point too.
Yeah.
And so I just associate it with like, you know, especially now that we're coming into Christmas time.
Where it's now, I'm not a big fan of Christmas in the city. I like it in theory, but it's a rough thing.
It's a nightmare. There's a certain point where just like, when it gets really into the thick of the height of the tourism before the holiday season, people who don't spend a lot of time in Times Square may not know this, but at a certain point, they just have to give up and block off streets. So it's like all pedestrian, like on a lot of side streets.
It's a lot like the way the Times Square walkway is.
Yeah.
Like pedestrian mullet.
Yeah, and that's not even like, you know, and then so it's just like on the side streets, it's just filled with people, hundreds of people just in the streets walking around, going to see like the tree at 30 Rock or whatever.
Oh,
you know?
God.
And you're just like trying to get home.
I literally only go to the tree at 30 Rock if I have like friends in town that don't live in New York.
I went on a date with a girl.
Congratulations.
Yeah, it was a real fun experience.
Yeah.
You know, you do it once and you never have to do it again, so which was nice. I avoided Cootie somehow.
Good.
Which was great. Yeah, yeah, it was real cool. But I went out with this girl. I went on like an OkCupid date. This was a number of years ago. And she wanted to go and see like Macy's. Or not Macy's. What's the one that's like that has the window display that's right on 47th and Madison or whatever it is?
47th?
Yeah, or 48th in Madison, something like that. But it's right on, okay. No, 5th Avenue, I'm sorry. Saks, maybe, something like that. But okay. There is another, like, giant window display, and she wanted to, like, do that as the
date.
Like
Bergdorf?
Nah, something like that.
Okay.
One of those. And they have just, like, the windows.
I know Bloomingdale's, but that's further north.
Yeah, it's like right next to St. Patrick's Cathedral.
Okay.
But on that side of the street, on the east side of the street. And they have, like, so you go, and that's, like, part of the thing where they have a line you just walk through, and you just see that, you know, their window displays. And we did that, and it was a nightmare for me because I get, like, claustrophobic in crowds. Like, I have that problem.
Oh, jeez.
Like, when I'm just, like that. So, like, outdoor concerts are not fun for me for that reason. I don't like the idea that there's a literal wall of people and I can't escape if I need to. Like, when you're in the mercy
of really
the crowd.
Nervous about, like, all the things I love in my life.
Sorry.
I love people.
Yeah. I like people, too. It's not like a misanthropy.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
just like my no, movement no, like, is restricted and everything around me is alive. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, it's not like you're in a room that presumably you could punch out.
You're making me really sad that the original version of this episode did not happen and I'm not ruining it because I'm still hoping for December for that. That's all I'm going to say about that. But... Because if we had this size room for that, that'd be...
Oh, that would be lovely. I would like that, because those are all, you know, that would be nice. But but just, like, massive crowds like that. And so I was feeling anxious in this place where I work and don't want to be with this girl that I'm only, like, half interested in actually dating. But, like,
God. Yeah, no, I know I'm well aware of that kind of...
Whatever. We've all been on dates where we're just like, let's just...
Yeah.
I'm gonna eat faster, you know. Like
I had a date at the Gethard show like that, relatively recently, and I was like, I'm good.
Yeah, like that was fine, but need just
like go Gethard show where it was just awkward.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Whatever. Sometime. Yeah.
Okay. You know, I mean, that's why we date.
Yeah. Right.
For the awkward situations.
For the awkward
situations. Not for love.
I date for the stories.
That'd be terrible. Like you're like a Taylor Swift or an Adele album, like waiting to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I would like to be. I would like to be.
It would be interesting though, like do something artistic involving that, but not in a mean way.
Sure. Oh, well, Evan Barden did that 100 dates thing.
Exactly.
That was interesting. That's
that
a
was really
that was
good
a very
read.
Fascinating project.
Evan yeah. Barden's up.
I'm gonna plug that. Yeah. Find Evan Barden's 100 dates.
I know 100 days.
Was it? Yeah, no, I don't think he did it in 100 days. I think it was just 100 dates.
It's not like 40 Days of Dating, which was...
No, yeah. It was
40 good. Days of Dating was something that, like, took me by surprise. You read that, right?
No, I didn't read that.
Yeah, have you heard of it?
I'm aware of it, yeah.
It was, like, two people that have been friends for a long time. There was slight sexual chemistry between them. Mm-hmm. They're like, okay, let's try to date for 40 days, see if something can happen.
Yeah.
And they both blogged about it for, like, the 40 days.
Yeah. Did they end up together?
Well, basically, they, like... She, like, fell head over heels over in love with him. Mm-hmm. He was starting to, and then he got scared.
Oh.
On, like, day 40.
That's what happens.
Like, literally, he gets, like...
The last entry was like, nope, and then...
That's basically what happened.
That's the last entry of the blog. It's just him going, ah!
That's really basically what happened.
Oh,
which
my
is,
God.
It's a really interesting read. Like,
that's heartbreaking. I have
like,
to find
it's
that.
Really, it's really well-written and sad and, like, hopeful, and then, it hurt.
That's a punch in the gut right
yeah.
there.
As a person that believes in love.
Sure.
Yeah. So let's, like, okay, now let me, like, finish act one of the show. I feel like that's a perfect place
your
to...
Your hourglass, chapter one, Dark Truths.
That'd be awkward if I was, like, well, I do kind of feel like the first one of the show is kind of, like, rambly talk.
Sure, I get it, yeah.
Yeah. And then we dive into, like, what I like to call the WTF portion of the
sure.
show.
Sure, oh, okay.
Because
cool.
the show does have, I mean, I'm not considering...
Do you want to talk about how sad I am, or...
Well, no, it's like, what the fuck did I do wrong to you?
Yeah, we're cool, Mark.
Okay, good. Because I thought I...
Mark, we're cool, Mark.
Okay. All right. So, Shonda Riley.
Yes.
Like, what's your big comedy inspiration growing up?
I think I, like many people of our generation, you know, I guess we're relatively the same age.
I think
right?
we're, like...
I'm 27.
I'm 29.
Yeah,
so.
So I grew up with, like, Comedy Central at the peak where it was showing, like, SNLs from the early 90s.
And, like, Spins with Candy.
Kids in the Hall.
Yeah.
So, like, I would watch... SNL and Kids in the Hall, pretty much every day after school, from the time I think I was in my early teens until they stopped doing that. And, yeah, I was big into Kids in the Hall, big into SNL. I watched a lot of Comedy Central for, like, the stand-up. Like, I watched, like, all the Comedy Central Presents and Premium.
Who was your
Blend
favorite
and,
as a kid? Because I know those are problematic comedians anymore. Like, not known comedians anymore.
No, or people who, like...
murdered someone.
Yes. Murder. I'm a big fan of any comedian who is a murderer.
Oh, God. This room is like well, the walls are closing. There's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know if my listeners can hear this.
Well, it's a ghost piano.
There's a melodramatic music playing next door.
It's what a 12-year-old girl who is a ghost would be playing in your parlor.
It actually
if you
sounds,
lived in a haunted house.
It sounds sort of like a bad version of the Gone Girl music.
Sure. I didn't see Gun.
Never mind. I hear it now.
Now they're warming up and
yeah.
It's boring.
Okay.
But,
continue.
Yeah, I actually really, I was a huge fan. Every Saturday they'd play, like, a Gallagher special.
I was actually a really big Gallagher fan.
I was really into Gallagher as, like, a 10-year-old.
Of course, because I remember not liking the comedy. Remember finding him bouncing on the big couch one really funny?
Yes, the couch one is great because he takes out a giant potato chip.
Yeah.
And you're like, ah! Yeah!
Yeah.
It's
and
like a big
like,
nickel. Like,
I'm like, oh, this is hilarious. Then like, I'm like, okay, when's he going to smash shit? And then he's,
smash your fruit, you dummy! yeah, I like that. But I also liked, the specials that I really liked that I saw, like, I saw Jimmy Pardo's special.
Mm.
His Comedy Central Presents.
Yeah.
Many years ago. I can't even think of, like, Tom Shalhoub.
Okay.
Kathleen Madigan, Jim Gaffigan. I was a really big fan of, like, the, like, Colin Quinn, Rich Voss, Nick DiPaolo type of guys.
The tough upper.
Yeah, kind of,
like
Brooklyn-y, Brooklyn-y, Northeast Brooklyn kind of guys. I still am a big fan of Colin Quinn. I saw, like, 2 weeks ago an HBO special he did from, like, 1992.
Yeah.
And he's, like, real raw in it. It's very uncomfortable because it's, like... It's, like, not material. He's just, like, talking.
Did you ever see Mike DiStefano?
I've heard of him.
Yeah.
He passed away a couple years ago.
Yeah,
I never had the chance to see him.
Yeah, the most interesting story I ever, like, I became a fan through Last Comic Standing. I do watch Last Comic Standing.
I did watch Last Comic Standing.
I
the first two seasons or whatever.
I got into it, like, later. First season I watched, like, Doug Benson and Amy Schumer on it.
Sure, yeah.
But I've been, like, obsessed with... I watch every season.
Yeah. I wonder whatever happened to Dat Fan.
I have no idea.
He's the guy who won in the first one, in the first season.
I know Eliza Schlesinger had some fame.
Yeah.
She
was a Last Comic Standing?
She won.
Yeah.
She won...
A lot of those people were guys who... men and... I say guys as a general term.
Yeah.
Guys who were around for many years. I mean, it was, like, a lot of just excuse to get, like, people
on
television.
Like, half those people I heard of, like...
Yeah, it's not like Star Search.
Yeah. The Italian girl, I think, like, in the third season, I want to say.
I don't know.
Open for, I want to say Pablo Francisco.
I liked a lot of
Pablo Francisco is one of my favorites I've ever seen live.
He's very interesting.
He was like the first one that I saw live.
Yeah.
Like, went to like, the Miami Improv by myself when I was able to go like, at 18 and not drink alcohol. Of course, in that senior year of high school, I saw him. I saw Mitch Hedberg.
Oh, Mitch Hedberg. I
saw Mitch Hedberg in the last like, 8 months
so
of his life.
Much. Ugh, boy.
Yeah.
Boy. I heard at a certain point he was just, like, lying down on stage.
I mean, that's...
Like, the drugs...
So he had, like, weird... Like, his last, like, 6 months of shows...
Yeah.
...were all either, like, really amazing or really bad. I caught one of the really good shows, basically.
There was, there was a, like, reality show or documentary or something they were filming around that time.
Really?
Towards the end that just never saw the light of day.
Probably because it was probably, like, really hard footage.
Yeah. The talk of the time was kind of brutal. I worked as an intern in development at Comedy Central, like, in 2008.
Yeah.
And that's just one of the things I had heard, like, existed in the...
In the vault.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know, because I don't know if it was Comedy Central that was producing it. I just knew that, like, footage existed, and they tried to cut it together, and his, like, wife or whatever was like, no, this is too, like... Too harrowing a portrait of
yeah,
because,
like, from my understanding, like, it was always, like, extremes.
Yeah.
And, like, because I did meet him after the show, because my friends was, like a journalist.
Uh-huh.
And, like, I have a photo of me with him when I was, 18 years old.
That's
a good idea. Yeah. Sure, but, like, I got into, like, Christian Finnegan at that time.
I had Christian Finnegan back when he was a fat guy. I remember him as
like, during Daily... Well, during a Chappelle Show.
Yeah.
Because he's on the Mad Real World.
Yeah, that's right. And a little bit before that, yeah.
Yeah. But I still...
He's one of those guys whose head stayed the same size when he lost weight.
Yeah.
That's what I'm afraid of. It's like somebody, but if I lose, like, a lot of weight...
We're not fat.
I'm a pretty big guy.
You're a big dude, but I mean, I wouldn't call you fat.
Well, my primary care physician begs to differ.
Okay.
But I'm afraid that if I lost, like, you know, I could... Like, if I lost, like, 60 or 80 pounds, I'd be in, like, really good shape. And I'm afraid that, like, my head will stay big. Or, like you know, because you know those guys who lose weight, you're like, oh, there's something about you as a fat guy that just, like, works better physically.
Like, because I'm, like, you and me are, like, built the same way, like, broad shoulders.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're both endomorphic body type.
Yeah, like, we look like we should be, like, lumberjack dudes.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just because we have beards or anything like that. Right, just, like, we're built.
No, if either of us were manual laborers, we'd be, like, real, just big, solid.
Yeah, we would be, like, we would be linebackers, essentially.
Well, yeah, I don't know.
But, like, in better shape.
Yeah, yeah.
But, yeah, no, I understand. Like, Hallie, I'm like, yeah, I can lose weight. I'm like, I kind of like how I look.
But will my body be weird? Yeah. I've had a weird anxiety about losing weight for, like, years that I just, like, no one will find me funny anymore. It's, like, a very
weird...
That's
so sad.
It's a personal neurotic thing where it's, like, you know, because obviously, like, a lot of that, like, humor is a defense mechanism and all that.
Yeah,
like,
of course.
I'm just a big sack of cliches in some ways. But, like,
aren't we all?
Yeah. I'm not special for that. But, so, like, the personality that I've built, the person I've become, is based a lot on being this in the world.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? And so I often wonder what, because, like, you know, there are some guys who, like, lose a ton of weight and become assholes, you know?
I'm so, like, because, like,
that's what I'm
worried about. My sense of humor, I'm a Leo, and, like, I'm apparently a very aggressive Leo.
Sure.
And I'm afraid that people are going to start being like, no, you're an asshole.
Right, yeah, there's something about being like a corpulent gentleman that allows you to be a little more aggressive because there's like a harmlessness to you.
Yeah.
But although, you know, it's like sometimes there are people who have told me that I'm like physically intimidating to them because I am just a larger man. Yeah, because, like, well, you know, I'll be, like, arguing with my girlfriend or something like that.
Yeah?
And
I'm sorry, I'm, like, loving this episode. This soundtrack.
It's like this nightmare cacophony on the other side of the wall.
What's even funnier is, I'm sure, I doubt my iPod's picking this up.
Yeah.
But, like, the fact that you're facing that wall
I'm, like,
is making it even
it's
funnier
very
for me.
Weird to me. But anyway.
That doesn't matter. Where are you from, actually?
I am from Woodhaven, Queens, originally.
Oh, so you're a New York dude.
I am a New York dude. Although my family moved upstate to Wappingers Falls, which is right near Poughkeepsie. It's like about an hour and a half north of the city.
Okay.
We moved up there in like 95 or 96, like that year that huge... I don't know, you're from Florida, right?
Born and raised in Florida,
yeah. So you moved up here in like the...
I moved up here right...
century, right?
I moved up here... Not even a decade ago.
Okay, so we moved upstate in like 96 or something like that. My brother had just been born. He was born in like 95, I think. He's 19 now. That works.
Okay.
Yeah. So he was born in 95 and we moved up like November of 96. And 96 was the year, New Yorkers will remember this, of like one of the, like the worst blizzard that's happened. Like there hasn't been a worse blizzard since 96, except for maybe that one we had in like 2010 or whatever.
2010 was the first really big blizzard.
I think it might have been worse than the 2010 one. Like my sister couldn't go outside because she was like young and the snow was above her head.
Yeah.
You know? And we moved upstate where it's just even worse. Like
right.
you go an hour north of the city and it just is like tundra in the wintertime. But so we moved up there then. And then I went to Boston for school.
Like for high school?
No, for, I apologize, for college.
So what were you like in high school though?
What was I like in high school? Very angry and I was much angrier. I was like more of a dick. Like I feel like I've mellowed real significantly since I was like 16. But like who isn't angry at 16?
I actually was not angry.
Really?
I mean I was like lonely and kind of awkward because I didn't really like who I was.
Yeah, I mean
but I wasn't angry.
I hated myself.
I did not like I mean I'm very open about this. I did not like who I was when I was like 18.
Yeah. I don't think I liked who I don't I don't 100% like who I am now, but I don't think I really started to like who I was until I was like in my 20s.
Yeah. Like, I mean, it's just a really weird moment, like when you like go through like most of your life, like up to this point,
just and now,
like, I mean, like I felt like I was always really sad, and it was just like Jesus Christ, I don't like who I am. I like the idea of me.
You're like letting yourself down. Like, you know, I love the idea of you.
Well, like,
Mark.
No, you know what I mean? Like, I like the potential. You know what
I mean?
Like, and I liked what I liked. Like, okay. I knew, like, theater made me happy.
Sure.
Like, stuff like that, you know?
I didn't find it until I found, until here's the thing is, like, we were talking about the comedy I grew up with and the stuff I liked, you know. Basically, I always wanted to do comedy, or at least it was like a thing where that's what made me work in social situations.
Uh-huh.
That's how I made friends.
Right.
I was always funny. I was always kind of a ham. Like, I was very performative around my house, especially as a child.
So you're like much older than your siblings?
I am 3 years older than my sister, 7 years older than my brother.
Okay.
But anyway, it was something it was always a part of me, you know, and watching like SNL and all the Comedy Central I watched, you know, and I was a big fan of the Simpsons I came to later, South Park I really liked, like when it first came out.
Right, right.
You know, and just whatever else, Mystery Science Theater I used to watch, and then I discovered Steve Martin when I was 16. I saw The Jerk for the first time. My dad showed me.
I don't feel like I talked about that movie enough.
It's the greatest movie. It is my favorite movie.
I don't think there's a moment in that movie that does not work.
No, it's not. It's every moment of it works.
Like,
every joke it hits for me every time.
I've seen that movie, honestly, at this point, at least 80 times in my life.
Yeah.
I've even tried to adapt it into a similar thing for a play.
That'd be awesome.
It almost worked, I got stuck in writing it.
Yeah. I feel like the problem is it has to be Steve Martin.
It has to be Steve Martin.
Yeah.
And that character is so close to unlikable.
Yeah, he really does.
Like, because the way I was writing it, like, it was kind of like I tried to make it like of course I wrote a character for me.
Yeah.
And I was going to be him.
Sure.
And I wrote a character for my best friend who was going to be kind of a weird combination of like Jackie Mason's character and a couple other characters.
Yeah.
I all roll into one and I'm like, Jesus Christ, this sounds like a cry for help.
Sounds like a cry for help. We
like it really
That's a funny
did.
Way to put it. Yeah, I saw that movie, and I saw Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid, which was the follow-up.
Yeah,
Have you seen that?
I've seen it once or twice.
It's a very interesting movie.
It's
like,
because it doesn't quite work, right?
I like it. I think it works, but I'm also a huge fan of the genre. Because what happens is in that movie, basically, they just have Steve Martin acting against clips of old film noir movies. Like, he's picking up the phone, and on the other end is Humphrey Bogart in The Big Sleep. And so they cut together. It's like
okay, I need to rewatch. Because I saw it a long time
ago. Yeah, that movie Steve Odekirk made.
Hong Kong Pow, Enter the Fist.
Yeah, you know how it's like old clips from a couple of different martial arts movies? So Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid is the follow-up to The Jerk, and they cut together all these different old film noir detective movies and just build a narrative around it
with
a few other things. And it's very goofy and absurdist, like, there's a runner where he's like making someone coffee, and he's like, "Yeah, I gotta make you a cup of my Java." And you see him like cracking eggs into a coffee filter, and, like putting all these crazy things in it to make coffee. You know, it's like ridiculous. But I saw those two movies, and based on that, I went out and bought a CD copy of Wild and Crazy Guy.
Yeah.
And so I listened to Wild and Crazy Guy, just blew my mind.
Yeah.
And then I listened to like, and then I just went down to Steve Martin Hall, and then like,
and
one of my biggest influences is Steve Martin.
I mean, I literally own a banjo because of him.
Yeah. Right.
I don't play banjo.
You just own one.
I literally have no musical capability inside of me. But I own a banjo, and I mean, the show I wrote for UCB, All Is Fine in Sunny Florida, I play a character called Banjo Man.
Oh, great.
So, like, I'm like, also, like, there's hopefully a Future Fest show, but it's not UCB.
Yeah.
But that's a different story altogether.
Man, what are you going
to
do?
But it's fine. Trust me, Shan gave me a chance, and that's...
Right, you spanked it, man. That's further than a lot of people get. So.
Yeah, and I'm not a sketch writer.
Yeah, baby. You did what you did.
Whatever, man.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, it's like, Steve Martin, like, oh, Jesus. Even like just his music is great.
Yeah, I like his music. The last comedy album he put out is called the Steve Martin Brothers.
Right.
And the first half of it is stand-up, and it's just like a few recycled bits and just like what all the shit that's at the tail end of his stand-up career.
Yeah.
He sounds like he's out of it, you know.
Yeah.
And if you read his book, like he is. He's just checked out. But the second half of that is just banjo. He just plays banjo live, and it's straight. There's no comedy in it. He just plays banjo tunes. And it's really beautiful. I mean, I've always thought the banjo is a beautiful instrument. I actually bought one myself. Like a couple weeks ago. It was a recent purchase. I bought a tenor banjo, and I'm trying to learn how to play like Irish music on it.
Right, that makes sense.
Which is like, it's a specific tuning and a specific kind of string. I just started, like, I'm just like working on it. Because I played guitar since
I've heard you play guitar.
Yeah, in my teens.
Right, well, the first time I think I actually met you, you were playing guitar.
Is it a Harrier show?
The Harriers, what?
Well, that's the band that Evan Bashian and I
was. It was at Mad Betsy the Music, I think.
Oh, yeah. So, that was when we first started and we were doing a St. Patrick's Day show or something like that. But, yeah, I've played guitar since I was, like, 13. So there are certain things that are just, like, easy to adapt, like doing scales and all that kind of stuff.
That's cool.
It's nice to be, like, putting in the work at a bass level on an instrument, which I haven't done in a while.
Yeah, like,
I discovered Steve Martin, and that changed a lot of things for me. And at the same time, when I was, like, 16 or 17, I discovered Mr. Show.
Yeah.
And Mr. Show changed everything for me as well.
Yeah.
And so then just, like, learning all about, like, those guys. And, you know, I was, like, going to bobanddavid.com all the time, like, in the early 2000s, like, when they released those DVDs again.
Oh, that made me so happy.
Yeah, and, like, discovering all of those guys. Like, I still, like, Paul F. Tompkins is, like, my favorite comedian.
Paul F. Tompkins, like, I really miss his podcast. Right.
Oh, yeah,
The Pot of Tomcast.
Nighttime on the Internet is the premise of that show.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he's
that
great.
That show is...
He's great. Every time he's on Bang Bang or anything else. He does, like...
He does Douglas movies a fair amount. He used to do a lot more.
Yeah, because he used to go on as, like, Werner Herzog and stuff.
Yeah.
I'm not the biggest fan
of the Mark Wahlberg character.
Really? I love it. I'm a huge fan.
I thought it was really funny the first three times, and now I'm just like, why does he have to be in every episode?
I like it. There are some where it's like, you know, diminishing returns, but I actually saw Pain and Gain like 4 or 5 days ago.
I actually heard it's a great movie.
Pain and Gain is amazing. I'm not a Michael Bay fan at all.
Yeah.
Like, I have a bit of an affinity for like Bad Boys, and The Rock is good, but I think he only produced that. But anyway, it was like the performance in that are so weird. And it's, like, shot so straight, but it's clearly a comedy.
Yeah.
That I was just, like, I was, you know, sometimes I'll watch a movie to, like, waste a little time or just watch something kind of mediocre to, like, shut my brain off or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
my girlfriend Taryn and I were just watching it at her place playing a board game at the same time, and I just found myself, like, really into Pain and Gain. And the thing about it is Mark Wahlberg's performance in that movie is, like, so the same as that character.
Yeah.
And so it made me laugh at Pain and Gain so much harder because I just imagine that world's version of Mark Wahlberg just being that guy in that movie.
Okay.
It's like enhanced my viewing of both. It's a weird
intertextual thing I have. I mean, like I may still listen to Douglas movies every episode.
Yeah.
So like, I mean, like, I'm not a big fan of the character, but I mean I get annoyed. That's it. That's really what it boils
down. I can see that, totally.
I mean, whatever. It's not a big deal.
Yeah.
So, you went to college in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Which one?
Northeastern University.
Okay, I've heard of it.
Yeah.
For what?
I went in undecided, and was, I think, undeclared for 2 years.
Okay.
I just really didn't
know. That's like as long as you can go, pretty much, right?
Yes, I did. I went exactly as long as you can go without declaring a major. So back to an earlier point I was trying to make.
Yeah.
Like, being a performer and doing comedy is something, like, I always, always, always dreamed of doing, but, like, couldn't admit to myself or, like, was too afraid to even, this is, like, triumphant. Was something I couldn't admit to myself or was, like, too afraid to try or, like, what will my parents think? And they're super supportive, so it was, like, a whole thing where, I mean, it's one of my biggest regrets is not just saying, like, no, you know, at 18, I want to do this. I still would have went to college. I don't think I would have not gone to college.
Yeah, yeah.
But I definitely would have been like, fuck it, I'm going to go to an open mic at the age of 18 or whatever. But who knows? You know, everything brings you to this moment. But
as the music actually stops.
Yeah, as the music stops. But so I was undecided. I ended up studying communications as a major.
Which, that's a great major.
I mean, concentration in media studies. So, like, I learned how to, like, I took classes that were pretty good, like an audio production class. which, like, when I had a podcast was super helpful because I, like, knew how to run a board. So I, like, took, like, a tax refund I got 1 year and just bought, like, a soundboard.
Yeah, I bought a board and I realized I didn't, like, the whole, I mean, other podcasts I feel like are fine, like, talking to microphones, stuff like that.
Yeah.
I feel like mine is just easier just to
sit like this. And it's not, like, you know, it's just one of those things how you prefer it. But, like, just because I had learned how to work with Pro Tools and do all that kind of stuff. I just wanted to put that knowledge
to use. I totally understand that.
And it's fun to do. I just like
it. It's really fun, yeah.
Yeah, I took like a television studio class, so I know how to do 3-point lighting. I know how to set up cameras.
That's awesome.
So it was good. And then I minored in history and philosophy.
Oh, that's a fun minor.
Yeah. I just, I've always been like a reader. I've always been like
I'm a big history nerd. I like really learning. Find it fascinating.
Yeah. It's like, the only nonfiction I really like to read is just, like, history stuff. But
I've read since Winter Park, so I've been, like, finding as much history as I can on, like, the neighborhood. And, like, I mean, I just found out recently that where I live in Park Slope is, like, a pre-war, which is insane.
Yeah.
I mean, I knew I lived in, like, Park Slope Historic District, but I didn't know it was a pre-war building.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, just, like, yeah, it's, like, insane.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it's crazy when you read, like, you read about the Revolutionary War, and you read about, like, the Battle of Brooklyn Heights, you know? Like,
wait, what?
Well, Brooklyn was a big battleground in the early stages.
Holy
of the
shit.
Yeah. Well, the British, like, New York was a big Tory.
Right, makes sense.
And, like, some of Washington, George Washington was, like, a shit general for, like, the early parts of his career until he, like, kind of devised the strategy he ended up devising, and in Brooklyn, if I'm remembering this correctly, it was based on a Joseph Ellis biography I read of him called His Excellency, which is great.
Okay.
Joseph J. Ellis, something like that. But, in Brooklyn Heights, there was, like, a huge battle, like a pretty significant battle in the early stages of the war that Washington had to bail on. Like, that's how he ended up in New Jersey, was just, like, running back.
I had no idea about
up
that.
To Ticonderoga or whatever, but yeah. Yeah, so it's just weird just going, like, yeah, that's right, like, Brooklyn was, like, a Revolutionary War battleground.
Jeez.
Like, you imagine, like, the cannons up on the heights and all that kind of stuff. It's, like, a weird visualization of that
Fort
sort
Green,
of thing.
Right?
Yeah, right, exactly. It was Fort.
Yeah.
You have Fort Hamilton that's it's over there, too. Down in, like, Bay Ridge, right? It's, like, over where that is. Yeah. So, I mean, it's there. You don't think about it, but it's, like, oh, right, yeah. There is a National Guard here in the
There is a Navy Yard.
But, I don't know. We're just, like, divorced from it at this point, like, just because of the way...
Well, because we're in Times Square looking at that giant sign.
You're right, yeah. Because of the way things have gone for America, we're nice and divorced from all that. Which is nice. It's nice feeling It's nice feeling safe. Well,
so what brought you to, like, event? Like, did you do, like, improv in college?
No, I was a writer for the school's humor magazine.
What was that called?
The Northeastern Times New Roman. I don't believe it exists. When I came in, when I was a freshman, it was this, like, Onion-style sort of newspaper that came out every month. And I was, like, part of the generation that turned it into, like, a Lampoon-style magazine.
Okay.
But I don't believe it exists anymore. It just wasn't, like, a facet of the culture of the school that ever took on. Like, it just Northeastern didn't... I don't know quite how to describe the culture there, but I don't think I quite fit in there. And I was head writer and then editor for that. Was like one of the most spectacular failures of my life, frankly.
Oh,
it just didn't go well, but it was just like I was too young for the responsibility. I just didn't have my shit together. I was, frankly, quite a drinker in college.
Which is allowed.
Yeah, but it was like, well,
it was an issue.
Yeah, well, .. I'm sober now. Like, you know, so that's like, but that's what happens, you know?
Right.
And that's one of those things that, like, is unfortunate, obviously. I mean, it always is. But I feel like I lost a lot of time to that, to, like, just, like, self-destructive tendencies.
Okay.
It just had me start later than I wanted to. Start, like, comedy.
No, I understand that. Like,
life and responsibility. But anyway, so it was just that kind of thing where I just, like, wasn't good at being, like, a leader of a room, you know, or being an editor, like, having that responsibility of being, like, president of an organization.
Yeah.
So I just wasn't good at it. I had to abdicate at one point because it just, like, I just wasn't going.
Jeez.
And I did stand up, like, once or twice in college. And I did it as a character. So I did
What was the character's name?
Tommy Thompson.
Okay.
And he was blind. So it was just a blind man doing observational comedy. Which, to me, was like the height of genius for a 19-year-old me.
Yeah, yeah.
It was very weird. I entered a stand-up contest, like a small one that they had at the school.
Uh-huh.
Like the college improv team, which did short form, held it. And I did pretty good until about halfway through when people realized that it was, like, not real.
Oh.
And,
shit.
Like, so, the mood of the room.
So it was, like, Andrew Dice Clay style, like, where it was, like, fully invested.
Yeah, kind of, yeah. It was, you know, I just wanted to see it. I had written these jokes for whatever reason, just had written these, like,
okay.
Jokes a blind guy would write if he were a hack stand-up comedian. And it went pretty well. Like, I did really well in those shows.
Yeah.
But there was a lot of, like, oh, my God. You know, like,
oh,
little rumblings. But I didn't get, like, heckled. And
yeah.
Nobody threw batteries at me. You know, but...
Jesus, does that happen?
No. But, okay. I mean, it was just like... But just... I don't know. I mean, Boston.
Like, you're making me never want to stamp, and I've, like, been, like, tempted to do... I'm scared. Stamp's, like, the one thing that terrifies me.
Oh, no. I mean, the worst that's going to happen is it doesn't go well. Like, you ever have an improv show that just doesn't go well, and you feel bad for a day after?
Yeah.
It's not that much different.
Okay.
It might feel a little worse when you're doing it. Oh, like, you know, you really learn a lesson about how time is relative when you're bombing. As a stand-up, because, like, I have roughly 15 minutes of material that I can do if I stretch out, and at that point...
I probably see most of it then.
Yeah, yeah. The set you saw is, like, what my set is right now. So I don't do stand-up as often as I would like to, maybe, like, once a month at this point.
Okay.
But book me for shows, if you found me charming at all.
He's very, very funny.
But, yeah, so you can blow through 10 to 15 minutes of material in 4 minutes. Because you're just like, unless you are a little more experienced and like can control your reactions to it, you can just like blow through all your material in 5 minutes and you realize you just have to like do your time. But you've set up all your jokes so fast, you know, just like trying to throw, you know, so much shit at the wall that something's got to stick.
Yeah.
And then none of it works and you got like 4 minutes left and you're like, what's in the news? You know, it's like, but I like stand up a lot.
I really love stand-up. Like, I really have a lot of respect for it. I'm never going to be good at it. Well, I'm never going to, like, wait, I should say that because I shouldn't say that because that's a terrible thing to say.
Yeah.
I'm just terrified to do it.
That's
and Scott
it is,
Wolf
Mark,
is trying very hard to get me to do it.
You should
at least
do
one
it.
Joke. And I have it in me. I just got to do it. That's really what boils down.
Think about it this way. I mean, you do this podcast. We've done 176 of these. I'm sure you've made observations about life or things that have happened to you, stories you've told. That, like, you could, A, reappropriate, just steal wholesale from yourself. But, two, it's, like, that idea of, like, let it be conversational, you know? Like, you know
right,
what I mean?
Right, like the Chris Gethard style, where it's, like, very much, like, hey, we're in a room, I'm talking to you, I might have a funny thing to say.
Yeah, and it's a thing where it's, like, it's going to be awkward, and you're going to bomb within, you know, the first 10 times you do it, you're going to bomb at least one of those times.
Yeah.
But you learn. You learn, like, what your voice is, what you want to sound like, who you want to be on stage. Like,
right.
You can present yourself as whatever on stage.
Yeah.
You know, and that's the beauty I found when I, like, started doing UCB and started doing comedy in New York is, like, you get to, like, throw it all away, you know?
Who was your 101 teacher?
My 101 teacher was Gavin Spieler.
Oh, the best.
Yeah, and he was, I took an advanced with him, like, last year.
It's
nice to have him at the beginning and, like, the end.
I heard I would always like him.
He's great.
He was my third advanced study teacher, and then, like, chronologically, he was my first ASP.
Yeah.
It was the Pelicans.
There was the three prop teams, right?
No. Pelicans was just standard Gavin Spieler Herald.
Oh, yeah.
So,
I think I applied for that.
It was like, it went up like in September.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. Or did I? I can't remember. I applied for some ASP, did. But, yeah, he was great. I love his whole, like, you know, respond to the last thing said and reacting naturally, which helps me... Like, because as you mentioned before, I play like a lot of big characters.
Yeah.
Which you got to ground those. Like if they go too
off
the rails.
I'm in the same boat as that. You know
that.
It's
like,
so.
I'm going to make all the choices all the time, and it just doesn't. Yeah. You have to. So like those things. I like his like lesson.
Yeah.
Plan. That's not the word. His philosophy on
a
lot.
Can we talk about the Serling?
Yes, I want to.
I actually was.
Do we have a lot of time left? Or
we have 9 minutes for sure.
Oh boy. I've been
and
talking for so
14
long.
Minutes. With that extension.
With the nice man said
yeah.
It was fine. Yeah, I wanted to, I apologize.
No,
I thought we had like 15
minutes
left.
Because like, The Sterling is a team I've actually unfortunately never seen.
Yeah.
But I actually was on a Twilight Zone improv team for a while.
Oh, yeah? Is it the IN one?
I wasn't. Improvisation used to be one like that, too.
Yeah, they were running that for a while. They had like a Twilight Zone themed night.
I believe that. Actually, it was a team that like was like basically theater based, but like almost everyone in the team had like real improv experience. Like Martin Ryder was on the team.
Oh yeah, Martin Ryder.
It was Jesus Christ, man. The Scenic Route we were called.
Okay.
And we worked on Twilight Zone for a very, very long time. I fucking love it.
Yeah, it's like my favorite.
So
you.
Who came up with the idea for the Sterling?
During the they have the New Year's marathon every year on Sci-Fi. Uh-huh. Whatever it was, 2 years ago, a year ago, I don't know, I'm not good with time. But when the year the team started, I was watching the marathon, like, on New Year's Day that year, and as I always do, was just, like, Facebooking it,
right.
And, like, tweeting it, live tweeting it. And Krista Jensen, who is another member of the team,
uh-huh.
was, like, doing it back and forth, because her and her husband, Dave Ebert, are big fans of the show like I am.
Yeah.
So we were all going back and forth.
Fantastic show.
Talking about it. It's, like, yeah, it's one of the best things ever created by humans. And we were going back and forth about it, and I was thinking about it and thinking about it, and then I had this realization, like, within the next 3 days, that I'm like, oh, every episode of The Twilight Zone has this central dramatic idea around which everything revolves.
Yes.
Oh, game! Every Twilight Zone episode has a game, like
yeah.
a dramatic game. And so I was like, well, fuck it, let's just make a form that works like
right,
that.
Right, because it's you three, Vince Moore.
Yeah.
Jesse Neal, yep. And is that it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Curtis Rutherford has been our coach. We don't practice anymore, unfortunately,
right.
regularly. But yeah, I forget who had Curtis come on because I did not know him. I met him for the first time when he coached us. I thought about, like, I like to think about team construction sometimes and who does what. And I thought, like, you know, like. Krista and Dave are both really good actors. They're great, solid players, and they're
right.
fans of the show. So they have that depth of knowledge that you would need. And, like, Vince Moore
is great
the greatest support man you could ever
yeah.
ask for. You know, wherever you need to take it, he'll help you take
and
it there.
Jesse's really strong committing.
Yes, Jesse's really strong. He's also a guy that I have – Jesse's one of my best friends in improv. Like, I've known him
yeah.
since I started, basically. And I had never worked with him at that point, so I also just really wanted to work with Jesse.
Right.
He's just such a strong player. He's good at identifying
yeah.
weird things and, like, you know, just pointing things out, calling out every single thing in the world. we put the team together, and we had Curtis start coaching us, and we developed a form from there. We, like, took a few different iterations, but then we just, like, piecemeal decided what the form actually was going to be and what it was.
Right.
Because I was trying to move as far away from, like, making it seem like a bit show or a gimmick
of course.
As I could. And I tried to, and Curtis was a huge part in this, create, like, a coherent form.
Uh-huh.
So it works with, like, we take the suggestion, and, you know, there's a bit of showmanship. Like, we all wear suits just because I wanted to do that as, like, a tribute
yeah.
to Rod Serling. So we all wear, like, black tie, white shirt, slacks. And we come out to the theme, and, like, I'll take the suggestion as, like, you know, you unlock this door with the key of imagination beyond it.
Yeah, yeah.
Imagine. And we take the suggestion, and then it starts with, like, a cold open, and then we improvise, like, a Serling intro monologue that, like, you know, identifies what the weird thing was and who the character is going
oh.
to be, and just, like, you know, just points out exactly what we're going to be doing. And then just try to take it as many fun places as we can before we have to do the outro. And, like, you know, there are obviously other things there. But
yeah, yeah,
it's
of
like
course.
A, that would be a long, boring dissection of...
the way Twilight Zone episodes are.
Yeah.
And probably, I imagine, like, some of these guys even throw in, like, the celebrity appearance type situation.
You know, we've never actually done that. We've
really?
Never, like, capitalized on, like, oh, Jack Klugman's in this one. Because we never found a way to integrate it.
It's hard.
Yeah. So
yeah.
it just, and that was, like, another thing that, like, probably felt gimmicky on its surface, too.
Yeah.
So, and the thing about the Sterling that I like, and also, I just want to promo, I'm going to be teaching a Sterling class in
yeah.
January.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is the other reason I don't want to just, like, explain it all here.
Of course.
Take the class.
Through the Improv Training Hub, right?
Yes, through
yes.
the Improv Training Hub. Amy Gerlich, who has been very supportive and nice to me.
She's the best.
For many years. Yes, she is a very good person, and I really appreciate
She's actually helping me with something also that will probably be happening in January, too. So.
Yeah, I pitched her the thing, and she was like, yeah, let's do it. So.
I pitched her something also. I'm not ready to reveal what it is, but it is involving some things that we've talked about tonight.
So anyway, what was I trying to say?
You were talking about the Sterling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I forget exactly where I was in that explanation.
Boy. Oh, shit.
Ah, well, anyway. Oh, it can. The fun thing about it is, like, the form itself. Curtis said this to me, like, last week, that it's in some ways more a style than a form, because, like, the shows have been mono scenes, the shows have been macro scenes. We've, like, tried heralds inside that form, like.
Yeah, it's mainly style. Like,
yeah, it's a style thing where it's like all about genre and commitment and like a few other things that we've worked on.
Of course.
Like, just leads to a lot of fun. Like, the tangents you can take it on are great. And like the plot elements of it are fun, and the genre elements of it are fun. The acting style is really fun. Like, I love doing it.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like a real blast, and it's led to some of the like the practices I've had with the Sterling. I've never laughed harder than I have at those practices.
And those four other people on that team are.
Yeah.
I mean, everyone on the team is diamond. You guys made it to cage match.
Yeah, we did. We did. We won 3 at Indy, and we did cage match, and I think we had like a really good set.
Which is all that matters.
Yeah, I was very proud of the work we did that night. It was like really fun, and that, I mean, obviously that stage. When it's full, you know, on a night of a cage match, there's like...
I mean, I've only had that experience a couple
like
times.
Some kind of electricity.
By a couple times, been like 3-on-3, like last year.
I did 3-on-3, like my second year doing improv.
Which is the most insane feeling in the world.
Yeah, me, Keith Kingbay, and Ann Clark opened, were like the first act in the 3-on-3 in like 2012 or 13. Or
I was the first one in my night for 2013.
So maybe it was 2011 or 12.
I mean, I wasn't the first of the first, but it was for second night.
Yeah, we were. It was amazing because we were like the first act, the first night, and it was like, oh shit! Like where you know.
Yeah, it was. I remember having a panic attack, and then I walked out to the applause, and then like saying like, the stage for the rest of the night, and then like Parm came out later, and you know then we lost.
Yeah, you just walk around buzzing like it's.
It was such a great feeling.
It's the juice, man. It's real juice.
Yeah. Should we mention everyone's Mary Kay?
Yes, I feel like an asshole that I didn't get to talk about that because I was just going on about high school.
Oh, no, that's my fault. I apologize because I like to talk a lot about random shit.
So, yeah, everyone's favorite game show, I've been authorized to give you a fun exclusive thing.
Me?
Yeah. This comes out Monday, right?
Yes.
So, our show will have happened, so I can't really promote that.
With Dave Hill, previous guests, Dave Hill and Nate Dern.
So, they were great. It was a blast. The show went really well. House was packed. So anyway, in December, our show, the third Friday, we're at the third Friday of every month at UCB East at midnight. So our show in December, it's a game show, a comedic game show, fully functioning game show with like sketch elements.
It really is. Yeah.
It's a real blast. And we have two invited guests plus one member of the audience, gets to compete alongside them.
Right.
So the prize is $20.
Yeah.
Our two guests for December are Pete and Pete. We got Pete and Pete.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Wow.
Somehow we finagled it, but so if any of your audience is around the third Friday in December, I guess it's like the 15th.
Yeah.
I want to say
that sounds about right.
The
third Friday in December at 11.
It would be 19th. December 19th at midnight at the Beast. You could have the opportunity to share the stage with those two
and guys. And I'll do my best to promote that later.
Oh, wow, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're really excited. I don't know how we finish.
Yeah, I mean, I've been trying to get them on my podcast for fucking ages, too.
We just, like, sort of stumbled into it.
That's amazing.
But, yeah, that show is just great. I mean, that's, like, my favorite thing that I do.
It's right so now. Much fun.
Yeah, and everyone on you had Jonna in here, Jonna Scrabus.
Yeah.
I think you've had a lot of people.
Sean,
have you had Sean?
I've had Sean was on my first.
Alex Teague, did you have Alex?
No, I have not had Alex.
Alex Teague is one of the funniest people.
He is very funny.
That guy is fantastic.
Who else? I think I've had more people than just
Will Story. Will Story's our new director.
Oh, that's cool.
Sarah Burton.
No, I
hired Sarah Burton is very sharp, very funny, very smart.
I mean, everyone on that show is just
Matt
brilliant.
Davidson.
Yeah.
Ryan Simmons, of course, the host. I don't think I'm forgetting anybody. It's great. It's like a fun, sketchy show. Lots of great characters.
And the two guests that you always get on
are always
like
fun.
Are always like either, like, really cool trivia people,
yeah,
really smart, or just interesting.
Yeah, like, we've had, like, Ophira Eisenberg.
I love that episode.
Yeah, Abby Crutchfield. We had Josh Patton on the show last month.
I really enjoyed the UCB artistic director.
Oh, that's right, yeah, Shannon O'Neill.
The school director, which was great.
Kevin Hines. We had Will Hines, Anthony Peruzzi on the show. Tons of people. I mean,
that's great.
It's always a blast, and like, I love the element of like the audience being able to participate.
And it's so much fun. Like, it's just like, I really enjoy the show. I hate whenever I miss it. Like,
yeah,
like the two game show shows at UCB are both amazing. You guys and the game show.
Game show showcase. Yeah, that's at Chelsea
now.
Every second Friday at midnight or something like that.
Yeah, but it's just
I haven't
awesome
had a chance
stuff
to see that yet. But I love everyone on that.
Yeah, and that's just a bizarre show.
Yeah.
Okay, we do have to wrap up.
All right.
So, what's something about Sean O'Reilly that people might not know that you're okay sharing?
That I'm okay sharing. I'm trying to think of, like, an interesting thing.
I'm not a big basketball fan.
I'm not.
Oh, you're not?
Not a basketball
fan. I thought I had a basketball talk with you once.
No.
I'm going crazy.
A lot of people know this, but maybe some don't. No, I don't know. I took lessons in Gaelic as a kid.
That's I did
that's
not
a
know
fun fact, yeah. That's, I don't speak
that,
any of it anymore.
That literally satisfies that. I'll just keep the thing moving. You're going to just be like, let's just let that like end right there. That part, that's
sure
fucking cool, though.
Yeah.
That's really fucking cool.
Yeah.
What about plugs or things you're interested in that do not involve you?
Things that I'm interested in that involve me, if you get a chance to see the Keith and Jesse show, you had Jesse Neal on last week.
Yeah.
I was thinking of that. That's great. I want to see Foxcatcher. That looks pretty good. Oh, shit. I'm trying to think of what else.
Okay. What about plugs for you? Twitter, Tumblr, Vine,
oh,
shows?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I'm not on Vine. Twitter, I am Sean P. O'Reilly, SeanPOReilly.
Right.
Tumblr's the same. I just want to plug the Sterling class again.
Yeah.
That's running starting January 15th. It's going to run 5 weeks through January and February, Thursday, 7
that's
to 10.
Awesome.
Go to improvtraininghub.com. It's $125 for the class, which is
not
pretty
bad.
Reasonable, I think.
Yeah.
Everyone's favorite game show every third Friday at midnight at UCB East.
And Pete will be at the next
episode.
Pete
will be at the next one.
I'm really excited at the exclusive. I've never had an exclusive
before.
Yeah,
you got exclusive.
Wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
My plugs quickly at MarkLeeB85. If you want to email the show, hgmpod@gmail.com. If you want me to coach you, please email me also because I've got some free time to coach. Sean, this has been fucking awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Mark. I had a lot of fun.
I'll see you guys if someone hit the mark.
Bye.